I love seeing how our kids are growing in a knowledge of God. I think it speaks to a good Sunday school program, and even more so, I think it speaks to some really awesome parenting. And everyone who's involved in helping our children to grow in a knowledge of Jesus should be highly commended for it. And I especially appreciate Ian pointing out to them that it's not just knowledge for the sake of knowledge. This is good for all of us to remember, but really great for our kids to know that it's knowledge for the sake of application, for the sake of life understanding. So, yeah, that's great. Okay, as I mentioned earlier, our theme this morning is love. This coming Saturday is Valentine's Day, so you're probably thinking that's why that's the theme this morning, and if you think so, you are absolutely incorrect. I'm preaching on 1 Corinthians 13 because I'm preaching through 1 Corinthians in Guelph, and today happens to be chapter 13, so it's completely coincidental. While you're turning to 1 Corinthians 13, I want you to imagine with me, if you will, a family gathered around the Christmas tree on Christmas morning, and they're opening gifts, and they're all excited about gift opening, and then all of a sudden, child A looks at child B and says, "He got a better present than I did." And child C looks at child B and says, "That's a better one than me." And they start complaining and they start bickering and arguing. And then mom steps in and she says, "Now you kids need to learn about how all this works. First, you shouldn't even expect gifts." My mother gave us that one. And it's like, okay, I understand that intellectually we shouldn't expect gifts, but I mean, Christmas morning, you know you're going to get some. Okay, first, you shouldn't even expect gifts. They shouldn't be taken for granted and accepted on that basis. But beyond that, because you don't expect any, you should be grateful for what you receive instead of comparing it with others. But there's a greater lesson to be learned here, kids. You should love your brother and your sister so much that you should be happy for them if you think that their gift is better. Because love is the greatest gift of all. And in this family, we try to be loving all the time. Not just at Christmas, but all the time. Because love is the very best that we can aim for. And it is an aim that we can achieve. It involves being, excuse me, it involves being happy when things work out well for others. So let's all try to be loving, shall we? Okay, and back to the gift giving. Remember to receive with gratitude, give generously, and just try to get along, because that's what special days like this are all about. Okay?
Amen.
Now, the one thing I want you to notice about mom's little speech here is that partway through her speech, she stops and goes from talking about gift giving and gift receiving to a greater lesson about love. And when she's done with that greater lesson, then she goes back and finishes her little spiel about gift giving and gift receiving. Why am I telling you that odd story? Because that's exactly what 1 Corinthians 13 is doing in the context of chapters 12 and 14. In chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians, Paul was addressing issues with spiritual gifts. And you may remember the passage where Paul says, you know, if the hand says, "Because I'm not a foot," or if the eye says, "I'm not an ear," it doesn't, just because of that, cease to be part of the body. And then Paul goes on to give them a lesson in basic anatomy 101. You know, the human body is comprised of many parts, and each one plays a very significant role, different from the others, and some seem more important than others, but they're all important. They're all interconnected. They're all interdependent. And so anyone, and it appears this was happening in Corinth, anyone looking at a spiritual gift and saying, well, he got a better gift than I do, you know. And from what Paul was saying, it sounds like they were even possibly considering leaving the body, leaving the church, because they didn't have the gift that they wanted. And so Paul ends up chapter 12 by saying, eagerly desire the greater gifts, and I will show you a still more excellent way. More excellent than any of these spiritual gifts that the Corinthians have been blessed with, but turned that blessing into more arguing and bickering and complaining and dividing. And so Paul says, I'll show you a more excellent way. And then he comes into this beautiful chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, and gives an amazing exposition on love. When he's done with that, you'll notice that chapter 14, verse 1, says almost exactly the same thing as the last verse in chapter 12. Desire the spiritual gifts. Although this time he prefaces that with, follow the way of love and desire the greater gifts. So, 1 Corinthians 13, while we normally hear it at weddings, just plucked out of context, and it's okay out of context, it's still beautiful. How many had this at their wedding? How many remember their wedding? Okay. I did. It was at our wedding. Our preacher decided to preach through 1 Corinthians 13 at our wedding. But as beautiful as it is by itself, it's even more beautiful when it's put into this context of spiritual gifts. So let me start out, well, I've already started. Let me continue by reading chapter 13, 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. So first, let's notice the first three verses of chapter 13. The first two zero in on specific spiritual gifts that were discussed in the previous chapter. Tongues, prophecy, and knowledge. And if we were to go into chapter 14, which we won't, we would find that tongues were a particularly problematic gift. Verse 3 talks about various deeds that could also be looked on as being particularly showy. So in the first three verses, Paul talks about different things that can be looked upon as being really great. And he says, any of those things, if they're not done with love, are pointless. Paul says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, wow, imagine being able to speak in the tongues of angels. And you know, maybe Paul had that ability because he was caught up into heaven, right? And he saw things there that he wasn't allowed to speak about. Who knows? It's conjecture, but regardless, don't miss the point that Paul is making here. Even if I could speak in the tongues of angels, but have not love, that's about all the value there is. Isn't that a lovely musical instrument? Anyone old enough to remember the gong show? Yeah. Do you love that sound, that gong? That is just so musical. And Paul says that's as much value as there is in tongues. Human tongues or angelic tongues even, if they're not done in love. They produce nothing of value. Paul goes on to say, if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, or let's kick it up a notch, if I have all faith so as to remove mountains. Imagine if the escarpment wasn't there tomorrow. Besides all the skiers being ticked off, everyone else would be saying, what happened? And Paul says, if that's not done with love, it doesn't matter how powerful my faith is that I can move mountains. If it's not done with love, I am nothing. The first time, Paul just basically said, I produce nothing of value. This time, Paul is saying, I am nothing without love. The next verse, if I give away all I have, wow, wouldn't that be something? Oh, we get impressed with philanthropic people, don't we? You know, Bill Gates or whoever, you know, giving away millions or billions of dollars, and that really turns our head. Paul goes further and kicks it up another notch. Or if I deliver up my body to be burned, if I am a martyr for Jesus. And Paul knew what he was talking about. Paul had come close to death for Jesus a couple times. And he would eventually be martyred. There were martyrs all around them in that time. Paul says, even martyrdom, not done with love, I gain nothing. I produce nothing of value. I am nothing. I gain nothing. Without love, none of it matters. And then Paul goes on in the next few verses to say, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. A commentary I was reading last night said that Paul uses 15 verbs here. I thought, oh, that's interesting. That makes a good point. And then I went back and looked at it and I thought, patience, that's not a verb. Kind, that's not a verb. So I went to my resource, her name is Ashley, and I said, what am I missing here? This commentator is saying that Paul is using verbs. The way I know English, these are not verbs. And Ashley said, you're right, they're not verbs in English, but if you go back to the original Greek, Paul has verbified. That's a real word, I made it up. Paul has verbified each of those attributes. And the words that he has had to use in order to verbify are words that are rarely used in the New Testament. In fact, one of the words is not used anywhere else in the New Testament. So Paul has actually gone to great lengths to make these attributes verbs, to make them actions. And I think that's important to know, because if that was important enough to Paul to go to great lengths to make them action words, that would indicate to us that a thorough understanding of love goes beyond the intellectual. Like Ian with the kids this morning, the knowledge that they're accumulating is not just to have knowledge, it's to learn life lessons. Same with love. The knowledge about love isn't just to be able to recite what all these adjectives are: patient, kind, not rude, whatever. Love lives patiently. Love acts kindly. Love does not envy or boast. You see the concepts here. These are lifestyles that we are being called to as Christians. They are especially lifestyles that the Corinthians were being called to as they mismanaged the gifts that had been given to them. The gifts that the Spirit of God had given individual is the adoption of a lifestyle. We're talking, it comes so second nature to a lot of us that it almost doesn't feel like we're doing anything special. That it's, you know, love is just what you do. And yet, the point was made that a lot of people out there don't do anything for these people, don't care about them. And we have been given God's love, and it grows in us, and we're just moved to do what we can for other people. So, love acts patiently. Love acts kindly. Love acts without envy. It acts without boasting. It acts without arrogance. It acts without rudeness. It acts without insisting on its own way. It acts without irritability or resentfulness. It acts without rejoicing at wrongdoing. It rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Now, in the context of Corinthians, do you notice how many of these, as Paul goes through them, are immediate indictments on the church in Corinth? Not envying? Hardly. Not boasting? Pass on that one. Not rude? Hard pass. Chapter 11, the Lord's Supper. One goes hungry, another gets drunk. Yeah. Not rejoicing at wrongdoing? A few chapters earlier still, bragging about how they were accepting of someone living an immoral lifestyle. The attributes of love, the actions of love, were missing in the lives of the Corinthians. By contrast, let's look at how God exemplifies many of these in the person of Jesus Christ. After all, God is love, as we heard in today's reading, as we've sung about in our songs. Patient, kind, both are mentioned in Romans 2, verse 4, as qualities that are intended to lead us to repentance. Not arrogant? Just think of the humility that was exemplified from Jesus, from birth to death. Love does not insist on its own way. He emptied himself, taking the form of a servant. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. He said, "Father, if it's possible, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Love rejoices with the truth. Jesus said, "I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth." So this list of love actions simultaneously convicted the Corinthians and upheld God in his supreme love for us. Truly, love is only love when it is accompanied by actions. You know, we'll hear times when an abusive spouse will say, you know, "I didn't mean it, but I love you," only to return time and time again to the same abusive behavior. Love isn't love when you say the words. Love isn't love when you have that odd feeling in the pit of your stomach. Love is love when you act lovingly to the other person. The problem is, in this upside down and backward world we live in, love has come to only mean that feeling. And the problem is, when that feeling goes away, and let's be honest, it's never there 100% of the time. When that feeling goes away, what does that mean for the relationship? When love is understood to be a lifestyle, an action, it doesn't matter if the feelings go up and down, which they do. It doesn't matter if the feeling is gone for a while. We continue our promise to love, our promise to act in a loving way. And in doing so, we are faithful to the vows that we have made. And you know what? Eventually, the feelings come back. They do. And they come back stronger because we've made it through that rough patch. And we've come out the other side. And we're stronger because of it. And we're more in love because of it. Those horrible words, "I don't love you anymore," is the quitter's way of saying, "I choose not to act lovingly towards you anymore." Verse 8, love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now, we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. Okay, so Paul now points to the fact that spiritual gifts aren't going to last forever. And he uses as examples those same three gifts, the sought-after ones, to drive home the point. Prophecies, they'll pass away. Tongues, those wonderful tongues, they'll cease. Knowledge, it will pass away. Paul says the gifts are temporary, but love is so much greater because love never ends. Paul likens the spiritual gifts to childish ways that, when reflected on by an adult, aren't needed anymore. Paul says that even with the spiritual gifts, they are only seeing through a glass darkly, and acknowledge that they are in part. But the time would come when sight would be face to face and knowledge would be full. And so with that in mind, perspective, thank you. With the perspective of the eternity of love and the temporary nature by comparison of the gifts. Paul says, so now, faith, hope, and love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Paul, many places throughout his writings, talks about faith, hope, and love. And they seem to be kind of the big three in Paul's writing. There's a number of places where he does group these together. So this is just one of many places. And that would explain why faith and hope, while they don't appear anywhere else in this chapter, all of a sudden they're here at the end, and Paul is comparing them, comparing faith, hope, and love. And you know, faith is not eternal. Faith, according to Hebrews 11:1, is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. But there will come a time, won't there, when we won't have to have faith in something we hope for or in something we don't see, because we will see it and we will no longer be hoping. So faith isn't eternal. It will end. We will not need faith one day. What about hope? Same concept. Paul would later state in Romans 8:24, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Again, there will be a time when we don't have to hope for something anymore, because what we're hoping for will be realized. But love. Love goes on through eternity. We will love our Savior forever and ever, because his love for us is also eternal, because God is love and God is eternal. So now, Paul might have said, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. As he goes back in, or continues in 14:1, where he left off in 12:31, eagerly desire the spiritual gifts. That's what he said before. But notice that this time he precedes it with, follow the way of love and eagerly desire the spiritual gifts. He has now made his point that without love, the spiritual gifts are nothing. The purpose of the gifts was to build up the church, not to provide another thing for the Corinthians to bicker and complain about. The church as we know it today may look vastly different from what Paul describes in 1 Corinthians. But certainly the points that he makes, and makes so eloquently in chapter 13, are as eternal as love itself. May each of us follow the way of love in every aspect of our lives. In church, in our marriages, our families, our friends, because we have been taught by God and have had it lived out for us in the person of Jesus Christ, how to love. May we love truly, faithfully, and sincerely. And as hymn 196 says, you can turn to that now, may we return to God the love that he lavished on us. May we love him more than anything. Hymn number 196, More Than Anything. Let's stand and sing.